Welcome to the Living Spiritfully podcast, the Mind Body Misfits edition. Here are your hosts for today, Paul Galoro and Claudia Miko.
We're starting now.
This is what we call the bloopers section.
Oh no, I'm leaving this in. Claudia Miko. Well, first of all, can we do our thing?
Yes, we can.
We are the Mind Body Misfits.
And we finally got it right.
How you doing, girl? It's been an entire month since I've seen you, but it feels like much longer.
It does, and I miss Canada. I miss you guys.
Well, we're getting into the cold season, so I don't know if you're going to miss it so much.
Yeah, it's still beautiful here. However, as most everybody knows, we are in the middle of a natural disaster here, although I don't know how natural it really was. The conspiracy theories might have other things to say. But in any case, it has disrupted life in a lot of ways and has disrupted sleep for myself and for many. And that's why we're going to have a little discussion today about sleep.
Yes.
Which is an important part of feeling good and being healthy and able to face the challenges.
Absolutely. Well, I had shared with you just before we hit record that I don't know what it is, but I've been fighting my sleep the last little while. Usually in the fall, like this time of year is when I have trouble sleeping, not trouble sleeping, but my sleep patterns get kind of erratic. And then I usually do like a little cleanse that helps me ground myself and it gets back into a regular pattern. But I don't know what it is. And I have not been able to get myself out of it. It's been far too long. So, I'm looking forward to this conversation because you always have some great insights and I know you're going to help me get back to my regular sleep.
Aside from not being able to lay next to you and spoon you.
Oh, I miss you spooning me.
You always have Dominic. You have the dog.
Yeah, but I got a spoon. I got to be the big spoon in his case because he's little. Yeah, I like when you're the big spoon. But Claudia Miko, can we talk about the sleep-wake cycle, please? Can you define that for us?
Well, the sleep-wake cycle is a circadian rhythm, and that's a rhythmic flow of the light cycles over a 24-hour period in nature. Mm-hmm. And that is regulated in part by the pineal gland in your brain, which is responsible for our biological clock. And we have talked about the pineal quite a bit in some of our other podcasts, but we've never really talked about it in the sense as it tells us when to wake up, it tells us when to go to sleep, it tells us when to eat, it tells us when to be active.
Can I just say something like related but unrelated because you just said it? I have to say, my biological clock is ticking like this.
My biological
clock. You know that reference?
No, I don't know.
My cousin Vinny.
Oh my God, yes.
When you said biological clock, that was the exact thing that I thought.
Biological clock is ticking. And I'll tell you that we'll get into this a little bit more, but when your biological clock starts to stop, that's a whole nother level of sleeplessness.
Sleep disruption, yeah.
Sleep disruption, broken sleep really is what happens. Mm-hmm.
Now, before we go any further into this, I read a while ago that there used to be something called the second sleep. This was way, way, way back in like, I don't know, pioneer days. But people would kind of sleep in shifts. They would have their first sleep, wake up in the middle of the night, do some stuff, and then have the second sleep. What's your take on that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. And it's been talked about a lot in metaphysical readings that I've done in that you should sleep like 5 hours and then do something and then sleep another 5 hours. I've mm-hmm. read that in some of my metaphysical reading, but I know that if you nap and if you get a quality nap, it can help your sleep cycles if you're not getting enough sleep. But I don't know necessarily how true, you know, to science that is,
right.
necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. But going back to our conversation on the pineal gland, did you finish that? Did you tell us what the role is of the pineal gland? How is it influencing our sleep cycle?
It basically is telling us when to wake up. It's telling us when to go to sleep. It's telling us when to eat. It's telling us when to be active. And that is affected by nature. It's affected by our 24-hour natural cycle of light and dark.
Mm-hmm.
So there are reasons why people get depressed. And believe it or not, while you think depression makes you sleep, it doesn't make you sleep in a way that is a quality sleep necessarily.
Right.
So you can be very depressed and still be really exhausted and tired because you're not really working in the natural sleep cycle, the circadian rhythm.
Right. Right. Now, I mean, I want to get deeper into talking about that, but first, like the common barriers for a good night's sleep. What, and I mean, you talk about, you know, menopause is one thing that can be a barrier to good night's sleep. But also like, you know, things like physical discomfort, mental chatter, which a lot of people, I mean, how many times does your head hit the pillow and you're like, then everything starts to run and you're like, oh my God, I got to do this. I got to do that. Oh my, that thing that I said when I was 7 years old is still haunting me to this day. And it's been 80 years.
It's common. And I would say that also our obsession with, and I am guilty of this, our obsession with social media and
1,000%
looking at our screens all the time does as well affect our sleep, which we're going to talk about a little bit later. The physical discomfort, that could be anything. That could be menopause. That could be recovering from cancer. That could be chronic pain like arthritis. People who have arthritis tend to feel really good during the day and their arthritis is feeling good because they're active. But as soon as somebody lays still, the throbbing pain of arthritis, wherever it is in the body, can wake somebody up. That can disrupt their sleep. Digestive issues, sleep apnea is another really one that we can discuss a little bit. Most people don't even know that they have sleep apnea. They just think they're snoring unless somebody tells them that they have it. And I was with a guy, I'm going to tell a quick story. I was with the man for about 10 years. And the first year I couldn't get a night's sleep. Because he would wake up not knowing, he would snore so badly and then he would stop breathing. And I'd be laying next to him, panicked, thinking, oh my God, this guy's gonna, is he dead? I'm like, you know, what's going on?
Yeah.
So after I explained this to him, he actually took my advice. He went to a sleep clinic. And, you know, they set you all up for the sleep clinic. You go, you take your suitcase, you spend the night. He was there for about an hour, 2 hours, and they said, you definitely have sleep apnea. He was waking up, I believe it was like every 10 seconds or 20 seconds. He never got a good night's sleep. And then he got a mask. And even though he really hated to use it, I thought it was great because we both got sleep and it really changed his life. It probably didn't make him a better boyfriend, but it definitely
Well, if he's an ex, maybe I don't think it did.
Well, yeah. It did change his life enough that he wasn't tired all the time. He was actually able to do quite well after that because the sleep, you know, really made a difference in his life. And it was kind of sexy, I thought, you know, that mask and everything.
So just one of my little kinks. Your kink is sleep apnea masks. Oh my gosh, I love that. But you know, I've heard many people talk about, you know, not knowing they had sleep apnea, going to get tested, then getting the mask, and then all of a sudden they, like, their life literally changes, like you said, because they're able to get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
With the, I mean, the mental chatter, obviously, like stress, anxiety, depression. I love that you said, you know, depression, it's a different kind of sleep. It's not quality sleep. It makes you like heavy, lethargic, tired, but it's not that restful, deep, repairing sleep, which is what we need. Because as we'll talk about later, the importance of getting that sleep for our brain.
Exactly. And those sleep cycles tend to go in 90-minute sections. So if you get awakened during one of those, when you're doing a REM sleep, it's also very disruptive for your brain as well. But our body recovers. What's interesting is you need the REM sleep, but you also need the non-REM sleep because one of the functions of sleep is to allow time for muscles to repair themselves. So if you're working out a lot, growth hormone is your anabolic hormone, right? That is produced during the stage three of non-rapid eye movement or dreamless sleep. And that's what helps to repair the tissues. So it's a really interesting, you know, balance between REM sleep and non-REM sleep that I think more and more with research, we're able to see the value of both the REM and the non-REM. It used to always just be REM, REM, REM. Now it's, oh yeah, non-REM sleep is really where you can get that anabolic effect. So you're working out, for example, a lot of these, our listeners are trainers and people that work out. And, if you're not getting that sleep, your workouts suffer. If you wonder why you're not, your body's not changing, that could be one reason.
Well, you just mentioned diet, or not diet, excuse me, exercise, but we know the importance of the food that we eat and exercise on our overall health. How do those affect our sleep?
Well, one of the ways that it affects our sleep is, first of all, if we eat, you mean the food part. So caffeine, which I'm drinking coffee right now, which can just,
But it's still pretty early for you,
it's
so.
so pretty. So I would say eat, you know, it depends on the person. Some people can drink caffeine and like neurodivergent people, like people with ADHD, tend to drink caffeine and it kind of puts them to sleep. So it really does depend on the person. But for a lot of people, too much sugar. And of course, alcohol is known for fragmented sleep. So if you're drinking, you better just, you know, just call it a day on sleep or call it a night because you're not going to get real healthy sleep. So we want people to, I'm not saying don't ever have a drink, but what you want to do is you want to schedule your sleep. Same thing with your workouts. If you know you're going to have a really hard workout, then make a plan, have a plan for, okay, I'm going to go to bed early. You know, I'm going to avoid, you know, being on my computer until midnight kind of thing. And then, of course, the other thing that happens, and I don't know how many people go through this, but as you get older, your bladder weakens. And for a lot of people, they wake up in the middle of the night, not because they want to wake up, but because they have to go to the bathroom. So that's another reason why, you know, people have fragmented sleep. You know,
That there's no real way that we can work around that, is there? Except for, you know, I hear a lot of people, you know, I don't drink before bed because then I have to, but that's not even a good idea because we need the hydration, right?
yeah, so you want to get that during the day and then maybe wait, you know, a few hours. I mean, you're not going to de completely dehydrate if you don't
No, that's true.
or you go to bed, but you don't want to drink, you know, a gallon of water and then think you're going to make it through the night no matter how deep your bladder is. We also didn't talk about and I want to talk about this really quick and we go back to the environment. So an environment for sleep is really important. It turns out that cooler temperatures are better for sleep rather than warm temperatures. And night lights disrupt sleep for a lot of people.
Yes, it's advised that you keep your room like pitch black
Yeah, you
at
keep it
night.
dark. And it's tricky because if you're somebody who does have to get up in the middle of the night and go to the bathroom, you could literally trip over your bed or break your toe, stubbing it, you know, on the edge of the bed. was. So that and the, that safety. But the other safety thing that I want to bring up is more of a personal thing, psychological thing, that if you don't feel safe in your surroundings, like your doors locked, you're sleeping in an area that you might get robbed in, you're in an unsafe city, or you're in a relationship that isn't very good and you don't feel safe sleeping next to your partner. All of those little things that we may not think about can affect our sleep. So looking at our relationships, having a really healthy partnership with someone that you share a bed with is really important to a healthy good night's sleep.
Right. Yeah. 1,000%. And I would even say, but this is my, woo-woo-ness talking, the feng shui of your room.
Yes.
Like the setup of where, especially where your bed is in relation to the door, because going back to safety, if you don't know where the door is, if your back is to the door, that even if people aren't aware of it, will have an effect on the brain and therefore how you're feeling settled and grounded and safe.
Exactly. So all of these things make a huge difference. It's not just, I'm going to lay in bed and I'm going to meditate and I'm going to fall asleep. While that is a helpful thing, and we've talked about it in our hypnosis, because you can use your valuable sleep time to reprogram your brain as well. But it's also important to remember that, you have to have more than just that. It's a holistic thing. It's diet. It's paying attention to your relationships. It's paying attention to what you eat, exercise, your sympathetic nervous system, right? So what's interesting is, in order for you to repair, like we talked about, insufficient sleep results in higher catabolic hormones, right? Those are responsible for the energy production that we talked about. So if you're exhausted and you can't sleep, or you did sleep but you don't feel rested, it could be that your sympathetic nervous system is on high alert,
right,
and your cortisol levels are high, because the sympathetic nervous system releases that cortisol, which helps convert free fatty acids, right, into energy for us to move and to exercise. And then also glycogen, which we should talk about too, becomes low, and cortisol also converts amino acids into ATP. And ATP is the powerhouse of the cell, which if we don't have enough of that, that also inhibits muscle growth. So, all of these things, I wish we could just like make it real simple, but everything affects everything, as so below kind of thing.
Yes.
So that cortisol level, when you go back to looking at relationships and anxiety and stressful events in our life that affect our sleep, part of that is because our central nervous system is on high alert and we cannot convert glycogen because it's in low supply, and we can't convert those amino acids into ATP.
Right. Something that I think is very important that I just kind of want to interrupt and talk about now, it is related to something that you mentioned a moment ago about, making sure that we don't have too many lights and stuff in our room. Public service announcement, and I'm going to get close to the mic so people can hear this. Get your televisions and your screens and your phones, get them out of your bedroom. That is like the worst thing. That I remember this because when I was a kid, I wanted to have a TV. That was like all of my friends had TVs in their room, so I wanted a TV in my room, and I thought it was the coolest. I bought myself my first television, sidebar. It was a Sony flat screen Trinitron television. It was huge. And the first thing that I watched on that was Princess Diana's funeral.
Like 1996.
It was one of my first paychecks from working at a grocery store. But a couple of years after that, Oprah said, get your televisions out of your bedroom. And I was like, okay, let me try that. And I did. And I noticed a huge difference. You've seen my bedroom. There's like nothing in there. My phone, I charge it in my bathroom. So, and it's also my alarm clock. So when it goes off, I have to get up out of bed to go turn it off. But the only real light that I have a salt lamp that I have on pretty low. That's the only light that I allow in my room. Because yeah, I really disagree with having televisions.
I'm completely against it. I haven't had a television in my room since I probably lived at the ranch in Mexico. And it was only because we all just had one room and it only had like two channels and it never worked anyway. It was back in the day. So I learned that a long time ago, sleep, that, your bedroom is for sex and for sleep.
Yes.
And that's it. Not necessarily in that order.
It's true. Okay. So another sidebar.
We have to talk about sex.
We have to. It's our thing. But okay. Remember back in the days when we used to travel a lot for work, leading teacher trainings and stuff. There was one time there was a huge conference. I had to stay with one of the other males that was, because there was only two of us in the entire team that was there. And he kept the TV on all day, all night. And I could not sleep because that blood, and it was in the US. So he had the news on and it was about shootings and everything every 10 minutes. I'm like, I can't sleep with this on. But he didn't care. He kept it on and just did his thing.
Oh, a lot of people. I was just having dinner with a good friend of mine whose husband recently passed away, and she's really struggling, and she is having problems sleeping. She says, the only way I can sleep is with the TV on, because it's giving her something else, because the rumination,
oh yeah,
mental chatter of trying to go to sleep. So, you know, that's something also that people, you know, who are under a lot of stress or have, you know, lost a loved one, have trouble sleeping. But keeping the TV on is not the best strategy. No. And what I was giving her was a strategy for getting out of that. And my strategy to her was, well, you know, fine, keep the TV on. But the first time that you wake up with the TV on, you have to program yourself to get up and turn it off and go into bed, you know, just at the first. So it, for some people, it is very helpful. I don't recommend it because it bleeds into your dreams. It
yes.
really rests.
Yeah. Well, and then also, because we're going to talk about this as well, about the whole brain needing to dump everything out. But if we have stuff on in the background, especially not like favorable stuff, whatever's happening around you while your brain is resting and processing and digesting, that is going to get programmed in there as well. What about things like binaural beats or solfeggio sounds? It's sound still, but they're programmed for certain brainwave states. Right. Would that be something that would be more beneficial for someone than having the television play?
Yes. And that's the other thing that I recommend as well, is mm-hmm. some type of, it can be that, or it can be just some, something that will bring you into an alpha brainwave state so that you could drop into the next state. Because remember, beta, or it's gamma, beta, alpha, theta, delta, right? So we're mm-hmm. going through states, brainwave states as well in the sleep. And if you're stuck in that middle place between, you know, those two brainwave states and you can't stay completely down, those things will help maybe drop you into a deeper sleep rather right. than, so you go from alpha downward to theta, and then you want to get to that delta in a kind of play back and forth there.
Yeah. You know, when, so Arise, before it was, there was many iterations, and I had a program called The Art of Stillness, where I was teaching people how to meditate. And one of the things that we did talk about in that course was sleep. And I had playlists that were designed with binaural beats and solfeggio sounds that took us through that, from awake state to like every couple tracks would change from one to the next until eventually you were in that complete
yes.
sleep brainwave state.
Helps too. So it really depends on the person. So one of the little tricks we use in hypnosis, right, to get people to relax is we have them strain their eye muscles. So, you know, you hold your eyes in a certain position until they get really tired. And reading can also help. And again, it has to, you know, hopefully something that's not, you know, the politics of the day. Which is nobody's going to sleep if they're reading that before watching the news.
Yeah.
Right. You may sleep, but your sleep isn't going to be quality.
Right. Right. Well, we talked about all the things that are getting in our way of sleeping. Let's talk about some things that we can actually do. I mean, aside from solfeggio sounds and.
Just looking at my notes. That when we sleep, we also remove metabolic waste products from our brain.
Right. I do want to touch upon that because that's important.
Yes.
So physically, what happens, like when we go to sleep, and hopefully we're going to bed at around 10 o'clock because that's when our body starts to get into assimilation mode. So it takes all of the food that it's digested through the day and then it starts to rest and repair and take all those nutrients and send it out into the rest of the body. That same thing is happening with our brain, and that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's not just the mental dump, of like the residue of the day, so to speak. But it's also physiologically important because you are getting rid of waste products that are accumulating in the brain, and then they get processed out through, you know, the liver and through the body. So yeah, it's something else, and it helps the immune system ultimately.
Right. Mm-hmm. I had a question and now I forgot No, that's okay. It'll come back.
Oh, we were talking about winding down next. As a misfit, though, we like to jump around.
We jump around. It had something to do with the metabolic waste that our brain is. Do you know anything about dreams?
Well, I do know a little bit about dreams. I used to keep obsessive dream journals. As a matter of fact, I am writing a essay for a book that's going to be out in February.
That's exciting.
The loose title is called Lessons Learned the Hard Way. And it's
such
something
a misfit thing to do.
Putting together. And one of the things that I was writing in my essay was the fact that during this very painful time in my life, during the AIDS epidemic, when my friend was dying, I was just losing my mind, and I would obsessively write dream journals. So I would wake up, I still have some of them, and write my dreams down. Wow. And dreams can be a couple of things. They can be just the brain dump, but they can also be prophetic. They can also be a way for you to get things sorted, you know? And one of the things I find fascinating is becoming awake in your sleep, which is called lucid dreaming, which is also an area that I'm very interested in, which is I'm very good at. I've been doing it since I was a little child.
Wow.
Waking up and being able to control my dreams by becoming conscious. Although it doesn't make for the most quality sleep necessarily, but flying and you know, all that kind of stuff, you can control nightmares and all that kind of stuff from the result of trauma by learning how to become conscious in your dreams. So I don't know if that answers your question in any way, but dream journals are very powerful.
Well, you kind of touched upon it in a little bit, but dreams are kind of... that is our brain that's like digesting the stuff of the day sometimes, right? Like as it's digesting it, like images of things that have happened might have come up, and that's your brain's processing all of those things, correct?
Yes. Yeah. And what I learned, see, I always thought everybody was capable of very vivid dreams and vivid imagination and vivid, you know, visualization, able to really see images. And it turns out that not everybody's able to see images in their mind or remember their dreams for that matter. And it's an interesting practice to get into as an experiment during your sleep, you know, rituals, is just having a little notepad by your bed. And, you know, if you do wake up, you can jot down, you don't have to even jot down your dream, but you could jot down like, okay, I woke up at this time and I felt like this and, you know, I had to go to the bathroom, or write the dream. And in Chinese medicine, each portion of the evening will correlate with a different organ system. So if you keep track of that, you can also look at, you know, the lungs, and I'm waking up, you know, at 3 o'clock in the morning every time. What am I grieving? Or, you know, things like that, which I've always found very fascinating, not just the science part, but that the part that's metaphysical.
Mm-hmm. That's my favorite part.
Yeah.
But, well, you touched upon sleep rituals. So that's one of the best ways that we can kind of prepare ourselves for sleep. One of the things that I learned recently in a course that I'm taking, some continuing education, talking about sleep, is he kind of laid it down. He said, don't eat 3 hours before you go to bed. Turn your screens off 2 hours before you go to bed. And read something like uplifting and positive an hour before you go to bed. Because the things that I always kind of keep in mind is the way your mind goes to bed is the way your mind wakes up. So if you're going to bed reading scary things, that's processing while you're sleeping. And then you wake up and your brain is a continuation of that. That's why also too, I don't like having a television in the room, especially people watching the news. You watch the news, your brain goes to sleep with that, with the news, and then it wakes up with a continue. You never get that break from it.
Yeah, I mean, our ears are the one thing. If you're blessed enough to be able to hear and have ears that work, they never go off. You know, you can shut your eyes, you can shut that down, you can close your mouth, you know, you can hold your nose, but your ears are always hearing. So it's kind of hearing, it's like food, right? What you hear also is nourishing or depleting, depending on what it is. But what's interesting about what you say is that, and this is what it is that a lot of people need some type of distraction away from their thoughts in order to drop into sleep. And it's programmed literally from a young age, a lullaby, you know, that sort of thing to help a baby go to sleep. So we're programmed early on to have something to bring us to sleep. And rocking is also another one. So we talk about the ears, but a physical rocking, which is our pandiculation that we talk about a lot, could also be helpful for somebody. They may not know that when they were a child, the only way that they could fall asleep was to be rocked to sleep. Like, you know, their parents rocked them in a rocking chair. So it's really programmed early on into their nervous system.
But I mean, those things can be like for people that need to listen to things in order to fall asleep, like we said, having the right things to listen to that could be supportive in helping you get into that sleep instead of, you know,
positive.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the
positive affirmations.
Yeah, for sure. What other things can people do for winding down?
Showering, you know, bathing, sometimes that'll help, you know, a warm bath. I have often told people to, you know, do warm towels around the neck, you know, anything that can like also be like a tactile, because some people need that tactile. Some people need that auditory, right? Some people need that visual. So I try to look at it also in the way that people take in information. So that winding down, right? Dimming the lights, turning off the TV, you know, a hot towel around the neck, taking a shower, listening to soft music, mm-hmm. having sex.
Oh, my fave.
Well, okay. So can we say that, okay, let's say you don't have a partner for some reason.
Right.
You know, your partner's on the mood. There's nothing wrong with masturbating before you go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
No, I mean, you're asking the right person. I'm going to say yes. Because we've talked about this before. The whole like orgasm can be a way of regulating some people's nervous systems. So if that's a way to help you kind of unwind and relax, I'm all for it.
Well, because the orgasm, again, if you're lucky enough to get one before you go to sleep, it's akin to when you're finishing up like a yoga class and you do progressive muscle relaxation, you know, you tighten, you release certain areas of your body. A full body orgasm will tighten everything up and leave you rested and yeah. really well, you know, well satisfied.
Absolutely.
You have to welcome these things.
Yeah, for sure. You know, one of my favorite things to do besides that to help me go to sleep is I need to have, like, I have multiple pillows on my bed. I mean, at one point I had seven.
Say multiple orgasms, but
I had multiple partners in my bed. That's what was helping me sleep. No. I mean, yes, but also no.
No.
that's Mind Body Misfits After Dark. I have right now 4 pillows on my bed because one goes under my head, one goes over my head, one goes on the front that I like spoon, and then one goes on my back that is like spooning me. Yeah. So I'm like, but because again, it's that tactile thing. It's the cocoon that helps me feel safe, which then helps me get into sleep.
Yes. And for some people, it's a weighted blanket.
Oh my God. Love weighted blankets.
You know, any of those things are really good ways to get that quality sleep, or at least to drop into it. I think that's really where most of us have our problems, is this dropping into sleep.
Right.
Not getting there, you know, not getting into that sleep that we desperately need.
Right.
And well, body's not helping.
Mm-mm. Well, our brains are constantly stimulated, especially if you're scrolling through the social media before you go to bed. As soothing as it can be, it's still stimulating the brain. So we want to find things that are soothing both brain and body, not just body.
Exactly. And I think also that we didn't mention that for some people, you know, their arm goes numb while they sleep, or they have, you know, some type of, maybe they're very overweight and they have, you know, positional problems that inhibit them from really getting a good night's sleep. So there's also that aspect of it is really having a comfortable place to sleep. Like you mm-hmm. said, having some pillows for some people, you know, to put their leg on so their back doesn't hurt.
Yes.
Or, you know, something under the arm so their arm doesn't fall asleep. Really mm-hmm. important stuff.
Yeah, totally. One of the things I think is important, first of all, you did mention how many hours of sleep we want. We want 7 to 9
would mm-hmm. be nice. As we get older, there is, you know, a thing that happens to a lot of us where we just don't feel like we need that mm-hmm. much sleep. And for some people that can just, you know, make them more anxious.
Right.
You know? So we say 7 to 9 is a perfect number, but if you obsess about numbers, just, you know, try to get the quality sleep, mm-hmm. you know, really that quiet sleep. And if you can do it without too many, like without having to take a bunch of sleeping pills or, you know, that kind of stuff, because while that helps you sleep, again, not necessarily the quality sleep. However, not opposed to taking, what are those ones that people get sometimes for sleep?
Power naps?
Amazing. No.
What are you talking? Oh, melatonin?
No, like the real pills, like the
Oh, is it Ambien?
Ambien. Oh, goodness. I don't have Ambien, but whenever I can get my hands on one, I actually love an Ambien on a plane, but that's another story.
That's for another episode.
I'm just opposed to, getting hooked on medication for sleep.
Because we want to be able to get into that on our own.
Again, you could have an orgasm and that would be nature's medicine.
The orgasm is nature's
Ambien.
Ambien. I love it. I love it. Give me nature's Ambien
Maybe
anytime.
that's what we call the podcast, Nature's Ambien.
I do want to mention something because we talked about the pineal gland and the circadian rhythms. One of the things that I am also very mindful of is how I wake up. We're talking about sleep, which is important, but also how we wake up is important. And I know a lot of people need loud noises, like a jarring alarm that just like jumps you right at. Stop that as well. Get that out of your room. Like my alarm is I've changed on my phone. I've downloaded a song that is just like a nice little like rhythmic drum. And I
Beautiful.
hear that drum that wakes me up and I'm like, okay. And that's like the and it's a slow drum so that I wake up and kind of the way I wind it down, then I start to wind up. So
That's awesome.
slowly get back up. Another thing that I've been doing this for the last year and I love it. It works. And I actually find now that I'm getting up before it happens, but I have a timer on my lamp. I have two lamps in my room. I've got the one that I is beside the side that I sleep on. And that I turn on and turn off when I'm reading my books and stuff. But then I have another one on the other side that at 5:30 in the morning, it just turns on.
Wow.
And I just naturally wake up. So I have the light goes on at 5:30 and then my alarm goes off at 6.
Yeah.
So I naturally wake up at 5:30 and then I hear the drum and that's the sign for me to like get up out of my bed and turn off the alarm and start my day.
That's
But
cute.
where the lamp thing came from is because again the pineal gland recognizes. So it's kind of trying to get you to rise with the sun. So as the sun comes up, you're supposed to be waking up. But I use that especially in the winter at 5:30 because you know the sun doesn't come up until like it's not coming up until a quarter to 8 o'clock now where I live. So
You can get and I forgot what they're called. You can get special light bulbs too. So if you're indoors all the time, so that can mess up. So you can get special light bulbs that are more natural light nowadays that can help with your rhythms as well. So I love that idea. I am absolutely against the alarm clock also. I don't like the whole idea, the alarm, just sets your nervous system up
That's the thing.
a stressful day.
Yeah, totally. And that's the thing. Because as I mentioned before, how you go to sleep is how your brain continues. How you wake up is how your brain continues. So to wake up to that, your nervous system is boom, already on high gear,
Yeah, and I
which.
think it's just we're all programmed. Society programs us that this is what we do and this is how we do it. And before we had phones that woke us up, we had little clock radios, or we had an alarm clock that had a wind up and had a bell.
Or then the buzzer.
A buzzer.
Oh,
And the
Groundhog
snooze is
Day.
not supposed to be good either. You're not really supposed to snooze. And I was just reading in our preparation for this as well, was if you're in the middle of one of your sleep cycles, and your alarm goes off and then you snooze, let's say for 5 minutes, you would actually wake up more tired. So it's really best to not hit the snooze as much as we love to hit the snooze, unless it's your day off and you're getting ready to, make love. Maybe
Then don't
don't.
turn your alarm on, just wake up naturally.
Yes, exactly.
Wake up to the embrace of your lover.
Or your cat. So, because people who are cat people know absolutely, your cat will come in at 4:30 in the morning and just start
Tapping your head.
tapping you. and not in the tapping way that we like.
No. Well, you know what? My dog does that too. When that light turns on, he's like, "All right, it's time to play." So then he starts licking my face, and so that's my. So I have three alarms. I have my light, I have Dominic, and then I have the phones playing the drum. But that again, that's why I have it in the other room, so I can't hit snooze. I gotta physically get up out of bed, walk, turn it off, and then once I'm up, I'm like, all right, I'm gonna pee, I'm gonna scrape my tongue, I'm gonna pee, and might as well get this day going.
Rituals.
Rituals, that's how we do it. That's what's gonna help us get that quality sleep, or at least get us ready for that quality sleep.
Yeah. So
Cool.
we can summarize, the circadian rhythm is your sleep cycle. The pineal gland is that small bundle of nerves located in the center of the brain for your biological clock. It tells us when to go to sleep, when to wake up. The common barriers to good night's sleep: physical discomfort, mental chatter, environmental factors, right? What else do we have, Paul, in our
To summarize everything, well, we
yes.
talked about the importance of winding down, making sure that we're getting our brain into the right state so that we can have that quality sleep, and then also just making sure that that we're safe in our sleep environment, that we feel safe, that we feel grounded, and that we have all of the things that are going to help to soothe our nervous system. Oh, and pre no. Well, yeah, pre-bed orgasms are good.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Pre-sleep orgasms
Sleep orgasms.
for the
If you
win.
leave with anything today from this podcast,
It's have an orgasm before
have
you
an
go to bed
orgasm. And
tonight.
don't be afraid of it. And it's not
No.
be embarrassed about. You're not going to hell. You're not going to grow hair on your palms. I promise. I promise you, because I
Look,
have
it's not true.
not true. Not true. It's not true.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Claudia
All
Miko.
spells, pull out your vibrator.
Amen. Oh my gosh. Okay, I love you so much.
Me too.
Well, here's a fun thing. I'm going to see you again in 4 weeks. It's going to be the 30th of November. We're going to have our final episode of 2023. Can you believe that? Wild. But anyways, I love you so much. You want to take us home?
I will take us home by saying, why fit in when you were born to stand out?
Good night, everybody.
Aloha.
Spiritfully Podcast is a Spiritful production. Executive producer, Paul Galoro. Co-producers, Claudia Miko and Catherine Stilo. A big thank you and much love to you, the Living Spiritfully community, for liking, subscribing, sharing, and supporting this podcast.